Welcome back to Tumor Board with Hilario and Anish. If you haven't figured out already, I'm your co-host Anish.
And I'm Hilario.
Today we are going to dive deep on the clinical years of medical school. So all about rotations, you know, going to hospital. So to start us off, Hilario, how did you feel that you were finally going to finish your preclinical years and all that time in the library studying and finally start working in the hospital and see actual patients?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, the whole point of medical school, right? Is that eventually you get to be in the hospital and actually play doctor, right? But I do think the feelings, you know, after doing the first 2 years, going into the hospital for your clinical years was mixed, because on one hand, you're excited to be finally like wearing your white coat in the hospital and people identify you as a physician or some kind of like medical student. But at the same time, you realize that, you know, this is going to be very intimidating, right? You don't know what you don't know. It's one of the classic like feeling that you have when you're a med student getting into the hospital, right? And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, we can get into how you can be prepared to go into the hospital in terms of how you present patients and what you need to know before you start every rotation. But there's a lot of ways that you cannot prepare for that feeling. And for me, it was just like a whole combination of, you know, excitement and fear at the same time. Mm-hmm. I did spend some time in the hospital, actually, in my second year with my mentor, the ENT physician that I mentioned in the prior episode. And, you know, I spent most of that time in the operating room, you know, on a head and neck surgery, right? And I just remember, you know, the operating room being so cold, and, you know, I wasn't very excited coming out of it. I liked the surgery, but I felt like the environment was very high stressed environment, and everybody was kind of like a little bit frantic in the operating room. And I was like, can we slow down and do this work? And that wasn't the feeling that I had, or my expectations that I had going into the operating room for the first time.
I will second that. It is really, really cold. A lot colder than I had imagined.
Right.
And then you're not wearing, you know, we're wearing like the...
Yeah, you're wearing scrubs.
The scrubs, and there's nothing covering you, right? Because you can't.
Right. I mean, you put on those sterile gowns and stuff like that, but they're pretty flimsy, yeah. And yeah, so I mean, that, you know, in the scope of all that's going on, seems like something that is not consequential, because, you know, someone's life is on the table, right? Someone's on the table, they're out from anesthesia, right? And you know, they're being operated on. But as a med student, where you're not able to really put that priorities into perspective, it's just like, oh, why am I so cold? it's all I kept thinking. I was like, why is it so cold in here? And I just, that was like the quintessential feeling that I had the first time I went into the operating room. So yeah, that's a long-winded, you know, answer to your question, how I was feeling when I went into the hospital. But yeah, I think excitement and fear was pretty much how I felt going into it. How about you?
Yeah, I remember my school, essentially they gathered all the rising third year students, like through the end of our second year. We went to the auditorium, then they were handing out envelopes with our rotation schedule.
Okay.
And it was totally random. You know, you had no choice in what overall schedule you get. They had some preferences as to, you can list preferences as to what site you want your specific rotation to be at, but not the overall layout of the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And you have no idea. And I was nervous. I got it. I was like, okay, like, you know, I open it and it said surgery first, and I was like, oh no. And it's not that I didn't like surgery, just from what I had heard, it's a tough one to do first.
Right.
And, you know, we can go into why, but, you know, it definitely, and the other thing was I was asking my close friends, and like, none of them had the same schedule as me. So I was a little nervous as well, just because, you know, I don't know everyone as well as I do them.
Right.
So maybe I didn't have as best support system. So I was thinking about that too, but, you know, it's still exciting to be like, okay, I'm going to go to the hospital. I can finally actually, like, maybe be helpful to someone.
Right. So did you guys have to do rotations outside of the main hospital that your school was associated with?
So my school had kind of multiple hospitals depending on the rotation. So there was the main teaching hospital. Mm-hmm. That teaching hospital had two main campuses. Then there was like a bit of a satellite-ish campus, still part of the main system, but they didn't have a rotation there.
Okay.
Then they had the public city hospital, mm-hmm. and that had quite a few rotations. That was also nearby, and they kind of had an affiliation.
Okay.
Then they had maybe some smaller practices, depending on like family medicine or psychiatry, that they may send you out for.
Okay. What was it all within the same city? Like, because you went to med school in New York, right?
Yeah. So basically, schools in the Bronx, and most of those hospitals were and centers were in the Bronx. Uh-huh. I think there was. There was one site for a couple of rotations, the hospital in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and then one, I think, psychiatry potential site in Manhattan, but that was basically the extent. And it was nice. I will say, I do give props to medical school. They mm-hmm. did arrange transportation. So they paid for all the transportation, whether it was a shuttle mm-hmm. or a paid vehicle that you could reserve online to get you to places.
That's a very well arranged a system you guys.
Yeah, have you know, other schools, like, students will tell you have to drive yourself and figure it out, but they helped us.
Yeah, yeah. So our, you know, rotation system was actually a lottery system. So you get different like slots to pick your choice of rotation and where. So where I went to medical school, you know, it was the main hospital, right? And then we had three other satellites within the same city. But then you get to go as far as Pittsburgh, which is like 4 hours away,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's really far.
Right. And then you can go to New Jersey, right, which is maybe an hour and a half in terms of the hospital that we were associated with, right? And, you know, you had an option even in third year to also like do some kind of like away rotation, but like, you know, it's not quite like the fourth year away rotation. So there was a lot of like, you know, uncertainty associated with that, which is not too dissimilar from what you had, but yours was kind of determined for you, right? They already determined that for you. And then it was
so
mostly in the same city.
Before the start of every rotation, we can put preferences as to like what site we wanted.
Okay.
But, you know, that was like, who knows what you're going to get.
Right.
But the actual order of rotation was definitely already laid out, like your track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we didn't have transportation per se. And within the city, you know, you could drive as far as maybe 30 minutes, 40 minutes to a site that you know, you have to do your rotation at. But if you were doing it in, say, Pittsburgh or like New Jersey or even in Bethlehem, PA, right, which is where, you know, St. Luke's Hospital is, right?
Right.
They gave you like a dorm room. But, you know, you're going, if you decide to do that, you know, back and forth, right, every day, that is something that you got to figure out in terms of transportation.
Gotcha. So basically, if you're from there or something, it's easier. But if you're not.
Right. Right. I mean, if you're from this, I knew that, you know, there were a few Pittsburgh guys, right, or people that live in the Allentown area. Mm-hmm. You know, they have family there, so it was easier for them to just say, I'm going to stay home, right? I don't want to live in a dorm.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to live in a dorm.
They get to see their family.
Right. And so they, you know, that worked out for them. So there's ways that, like, you know, even if you got Pittsburgh and someone who is from Pittsburgh didn't get Pittsburgh, you could maybe trade with them, and that was possible. So that was something that we could also do if you wanted to trade spots with someone. But it's just like, I was not interested in going anywhere further than, you know, an hour. I did, my furthest rotation was probably in St. Luke's, which is maybe an hour and a half. There was a dormitory there that we could stay, but it was like almost like a monastery, like nothing. You couldn't have like electrical appliances, all that kind of stuff. At that phase in my life, I was not interested in living in a dorm because, you know, I went to boarding school for high school.
Wait, so you couldn't even bring like a toaster or microwave?
No, they were concerned about fires. you know, so you couldn't do toaster. They did have a fridge there. And
but no microwave.
I believe there was a microwave, but that wasn't necessarily legal to have it in the dorm.
Gotcha.
Which is really weird.
That's really difficult for being a med student.
Right. Right. And they tried to give us, like, you know, a little bit of a stipend to buy hot food in the cafeteria. But I remember there was a fridge, there was a microwave, which technically was not legal to have over there, but it was would have been unreasonable to not to have a microwave, right? And there was, like, you know, a twin bed you had, and that was it, right? And that idea didn't really jive with me. So I had a dorm room, but I never really stayed in it. You know, I just drove every day for my rotation. So that was like an hour and a half one way. So 3 hours driving every day. And I was like, no, I'm not going to stay in a dorm room for this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's some of the stuff that you got to really think about, because, like, that's not something I expected. Like, going as far as Pittsburgh when I applied to a school in Philadelphia, right, was not necessarily, you know, what I had in mind, you know, when I was going to med school, right?
Yeah, and that transportation, even for me, wasn't as, like, far, but it definitely, you know, is a time sink. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to allocate that transportation time. You have to make sure you're waking up early or, you know, coming back a certain time, and have to adjust, mm-hmm. you know, your whole schedule for that. Mm-hmm. So, Hilario, what was your first rotation, and how was that?
Yeah, my first rotation was in OB. And OB was interesting for a number of reasons, right? Like, you know, you spend half of the time in gyn clinic, and then you spend a good number of the time with, you know, the obstetricians, right? Delivering babies and seeing C-sessions and stuff like that. And then I spent a little bit of time also doing gyn-onc because I knew I wanted to do oncology. So, you know, OB is, like, definitely not my preferred, like, first rotation before I went to medical school, right? So if you had asked me, I probably would have done some kind of internal medicine, because I feel like internal medicine is sort of like the backbone of all medicine, right? You learn everything in general terms, right? And then you kind of riff off from that. Like, you kind of, like, adjust a little bit when you get to OB, you adjust a little bit when you go to nephro or, like, some other specialty. But, like, before we get into third year rotations, you know, we do learn a little bit about what normal labs look like, you know, what normal physical exam and all that kind of stuff look like, right? And then so to go from that to OB, where everything is different, right? Like, you know, labs are, like, off, right? You look at it on a face value. If you're not told that, you know, this patient is a pregnant woman, right, you would think all these labs are, like, abnormal, right? And in terms of, like, hemoglobin, right? Because, like, we know, like, pregnant women, like, you know, have a lot more plasma. So their hemoglobin, you know, tends to be a lot lower than, you know, the average person if they were not pregnant, right? So, like, all of these, like, little differences, right? And the things that matter even to the attendants and what they want to hear, right? It's, like, so different. And not starting from that super specialized type of rotation was kind of, like, disorienting, right, in the very beginning. But also, I think, like, another way that you can flip this is that, like, it was just like a good way to be adaptable, right? Like, you're thrown into something that you know you're not necessarily expecting, and then trying to like readjust yourself and learn on the fly, you know, was pretty interesting. You know, I had not done pelvic exams before that, right? And definitely on your first day of OB, you know, you
basically what you're doing, right?
That's what you're doing, right? If whether you're in gyne, people are coming for their gyne appointments, right? And we have to do pelvic exams. So you do that with either a midwife, a nurse, or the attending, right? You learn to do pelvic exams, right? And do, you know, speculum exam, pap smears, right? All that kind of stuff. So that was like a, you know, like a first day for a first day medical student rotation. That was like very eye opening, right? And then, you know, you talk about the time that you spend in labor and delivery. So I did my labor and delivery. I had 2 weeks of labor and delivery. The first week was during the day. And apparently babies don't like to come during the day. So I had maybe like a couple deliveries that I was part of. And then the following week was the night. And I remember just waiting. It's like, oh man, I'm only going to have like two deliveries this whole rotation. And that thought, I felt like jinxed everything, because we had like eight people that were like, you know, in labor by 3 o'clock in the morning, and like everything was a chaos. And everything was a chaos. Like 3 a.m., that's when everybody went to labor. And, you know, it was very, very cool because there were so many deliveries, and I got the opportunity to be able to like actually like help deliver babies. And that was a really cool experience. I remember coming the next day and my wife telling me that, like, I look very bewildered. Like, my eyes were like going to pop out of their sockets, right? And that was because I came out of it. I was like, oh my God, I don't know how the time passed. So from 3 a.m. to 8 a.m., right? I was there till the next day, right? 8 a.m. It was just like nonstop, like doing something.
And you can't just, you know, you can't stop. You're on the clock of
patients and delivery. But the thing is, you don't feel it. You don't feel like the time is passing because there's so much happening, you know? Yeah. You know, people are like in labor, you know, there's a whole lot going on. And thankfully, there were no emergencies on that day. And then the next thing was like, you know, it's an emergency C-section, which is a crazy experience, right? For some reason, I think I had been told that, like, when you're doing emergency C-sections, like when you're doing C-sections in general, like people are not under anesthesia for the most part. I didn't realize that was the case. And, you know, just seeing an emergency C-section, and then they put this like gown across so that the woman doesn't see what is obviously going, you know, going down there where, you know, this abdomen is literally ripped open. Right.
Yeah.
And then that, you know, barrier fell, and then she saw it. Yeah, I know. I don't know what happened, but it fell because it was held together by like clips, right? On one end to the other end, right? And one side fell, and then she saw us trying to pull the baby out of it. And then she's like, get it out, get it out. It was very traumatic, and it was very intense. And we quickly put a thing up, and we calm her down and say, yeah, we, you know, apologize for like, you know, kind of like not having a very good physical barrier. But that was like really frantic and very interesting. And I came out of like OB thinking that like, if I wanted to do OB, I probably would want to be in obstetrics, not guy. But then obstetrics is not oncology, right? So I was so that was where I got lost a little bit. It's like, okay, maybe not OB, but
yeah, that I just want to comment on that, that C-section story. C-sections were nothing like I thought. You look at the scar and it's like, okay, I mean, you know, they have a scar, but I mean, it makes sense that, yeah, you're literally cutting the abdomen open.
Right.
Then being awake is wild.
Right. I mean, obviously they don't feel the pain, but they can tell you they feel the pressure, you trying to like, you know, take the baby out and like kind of like opening up the abdomen, right? And it's just like the craziest and
like, I was I was in some ways amazed, some ways mortified all at the same time.
Yeah.
I will say some of my girl doctor friends and med school friends, you know, they would see and they're like, there's no way I'm getting an elective C-section ever. I don't blame them.
I was pretty
amazed.
Actually. Yeah. So I came out of it thinking, oh my God, OBs are like, you know, very, very, very talented, and it's like very remarkable specialty to be able to, you know, to deliver babies and like see a new life, right? And at the same time, I was like, if I was a woman, I would never have a baby, whether it's vaginal delivery or whether it's like C-section, because like it just seems so traumatic and so like so much involved. And I just can't believe, like, maybe seeing a new baby kind of like takes all of that away. And I think I've heard my mom talk about how like, oh, it's so much painful leading up to everything. And then once you see the baby, it makes you forget all of that, the pain and all the trauma associated with it. But like, I don't think I would be able to have a baby.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. The first delivery I saw, you know, and I think some of these formative experiences really end up shaping like your thoughts.
Right.
And the, you know, first of all, it's like the head is, you know, and it's sticking out. And
right.
It looks, you know, it's interesting the way it looks. Right. And the head for this baby was like sideways. And okay. So it wasn't, I guess, in like a proper position.
Right.
And then, you know, they had to take like a forceps and like try and turn it. And mm-hmm. It was just a very
right.
like traumatic thing.
Right.
I feel like I was traumatized. The mom is like, you know, whatever, just like,
right.
do something. Right. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Right. And babies, you know, interestingly, are very tough. Like, even when you're delivering them and like pulling them out, you know, in different ways, like, you think you're going to break them. Obviously, you don't want to like, be super aggressive with it, but like the kind of maneuvers that like you're taking through in like a vaginal canal, like birth, it's like just remarkable how resilient the human body is even before, you know, they start like, you know, taking their first breath out of their mom. It's just, it's just impressive. Another story was I had this like, this patient, you know, I think that was probably like her seventh baby. And I was like, this is before I had that, you know, 3 a.m. like slew of like, you know, deliveries. And so I was eager to try and get like, you know, a few, you know, deliveries under my belt, right? So she was the only one that was like, you know, on that day was like in a delivery room. It was like in the afternoon or something like that. And, you know, I was trying to kind of like get close to her, get to know her, because that's the one thing that our attendants emphasize, is that like, you know, if you're going to be in someone's delivery, right, they don't know you. So you know, introduce yourself, you know, try and like build some rapport between yourself and this individual that, you know, you just seeing for the first time as a med student, right? So that when you're in the delivery, you can be a source of like support or someone that like, you know, familiar with them, right? So you don't want to just show up in a delivery room without actually ever spoken to the patient, right? Anyway, so I go and I try, you know, talk to this lady, you know, what her expectations are, how she feeling, all that stuff. And, you know, before I left the room, I asked if she wanted something. She said, oh yeah, I think I want some ice. And I was like, okay, I think I can get ice. But you know, like, med students, like half of the time, we spend maybe a good number of our time lost in the hospital. So looking for the ice, like the kitchen on the labor and delivery floor, and getting ice for her took maybe all of 5 minutes, right? When I came back, I swear the lady had already delivered, because she had so many babies, it just passed so quickly. And I just like, it was just so remarkable. So I wasn't able to be part of it, but it was just like, interesting how quick she was able to deliver that baby. And I was like, okay, well, note to self, and make sure that, you know, if it's someone who's had multiple babies, that, you know, you stay close so that you don't miss a delivery. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so what, you had surgery as your first rotation.
Yeah.
what was your first day like on surgery?
Yeah, my first day. So, you know, starting with surgery was definitely difficult. I think for a number of reasons. One, you immediately have to change your sleep schedule and get there really early.
Right.
Because you got a pre-round. I was there at like, what, 5?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go through all the patients, just figure out what you can. You know, one thing, and this is one thing I think I was able to get much better at, but you have to carry the bucket around as a med student. And I don't know if you remember, but for those of you who don't know, there is essentially this like tool box, like tool bucket, whether you put in like tape, gauzes, and all this stuff.
Oh, so I know. I don't think we called it a bucket though.
I don't remember the name. I don't remember like what we used to call it, but you know, like the tray thing. And I had to make sure that I had enough for every patient, and that as soon as we get in the room,
right,
I know exactly what we're going to do. Like, are we going to change that gauze? What gauze?
Uh-huh.
How much gauze?
Right.
And I'd have to just like, you know, whip it out and open it and give it to them, or give it to them and cut it. And I had to have, I ended up by the end of the rotation, like I had a method of where I was putting my scissors, where I was putting which gauze, and like, you know, which pocket in my white coat had which thing in it.
Right.
Because, man, they judged you really hard if you did not do that properly.
Right.
Residents. They
right.
were very upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. You know, it's part of their workflow.
Right.
But I don't think it was ever really taught. And it was just something you just had to, like, pick up and do. But I've always felt a little undervalued.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, my first day, I didn't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really ever explained to me.
Right.
And it's just kind of something you pick up. At least I felt that
right.
was also the case for other people who took surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had many consults in the ER that we had to evaluate, and I would go with the resident and evaluate them. And there's all sorts of stuff, whether it was like, you know, some like appendicitis, or I remember doing the pelvic exam in the ER. That was my, I had done one as like a practice pelvic exam in my second year, but this is my first real pelvic exam with a surgery resident in the ER. It's a kind of very chaotic environment. And, you know, that was interesting. Then we had challenging conversations with people about like what we couldn't do. And I was just kind of there for that. We put an NG tube in a couple people, and that was my first time doing that.
What's an NG tube for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah. So it's essentially, it's a nasogastric tube, and you put it through the nose, and it goes through the nose and then to the stomach, and you do it for a variety of reasons, but maybe you want to have them avoid intake through their mouth, and so then you feed them through this tube. And there was, I guess, like a specific technique that I was taught. I would try to, you know, follow it, and it was like C1, D1, T1.
Exactly.
I definitely did not teach one after one. It took me a few, but
right.
But that was interesting.
Yeah.
It was definitely the dynamic of the surgery team was, it was definitely like moving. Things were moving very fast. People were running from the floors to the OR.
Right.
And you kind of just had to figure things out as a student. I do think it was the dynamic, and I had compared this a lot when I went on other rotations, it was a more, at least my experience was more like a confrontational, or I think more of a stressful environment than maybe some of my other rotations that I felt.
Yeah. But do you think like maybe there's a point to kind of like the attitudes and the regimented, like what's it called, atmosphere of surgery?
Oh, for sure. Okay. You have to be like that, because every decision you make is so important.
Right.
You need the surgeries to go well.
Right.
And, you know, I would want my surgeon to be very particular about how they're, you know, caring for the patient, preparing for it, changing all the, you know, all the wound care stuff, asking pointed questions.
Right.
and doing the surgery in the OR. Like, I would want them to be like that. So I have no problem with that. Just as a student, when you're starting out, it was just very different. You don't expect it.
So, I mean, I do think like in a lot of ways too, like, you know, different specialty attract different personalities, right? And I think you have to be a particular type of personality to be attracted to surgery, to be attracted to oncology, right? To be attracted to internal medicine, right? So, you know, while that like surgery comes with that stressful, there are people that really enjoy being in that high, like fast-paced, intense environment, right? And they actually do well in those situations. And you certainly want people like that, right?
Yeah. I did like, you know, as a student, I could go into the OR and kind of watch them if I wasn't helping out on the floors. And it was really cool, you know, but so robotic surgeries, open surgeries, and kind of all sorts of stuff. I will say the OR culture really was like sudden culture, you know, like the OR nurse owns the OR, like listen to everything she has to say he has to say. I did, but it was really cool to see the surgeries.
Did you guys have different, like, so different subspecialties in surgery that you get to rotate in as a med student?
Yeah, so I think my rotation was 7 weeks, if I remember correctly. About five of those weeks was like general surgery. And I quickly realized that I was not interested in the actual like problems that it just wasn't as, you know, stimulating to me, like appendicitis, cholecystitis.
For general surgery.
For general surgery. Okay. But then we had kind of like 2 weeks that we did kind of subspecialty stuff. And I did see some rectal, colorectal things, which were, man, they were interesting. And I got to say, there's a lot of poop in the colon, man. Like there's poop all over. I mean, it just gets all in your gloves and like all sorts, you know. I remember like holding the colon and holding it with, you know, the equipment and the surgeon kind of making the incisions and whatever. And man, it gets messy. It gets super messy.
Right.
More prop, you know, all props to the surgeon himself. I saw some urology cases of the robotic prostatectomies, which were really cool to kind of see. I did have,
and that is relevant to us as
Right? Yeah, definitely relevant to us. At the time, though, I didn't know it was going to be relevant, but it was relevant. I saw plastic surgery. I was really amazed by plastic surgery. Really, it was so interesting.
It's intricate and very like delicate work, and it's like you have to be like very meticulous about what you're doing, right?
Yeah, the microscopic surgery. They're literally looking in a microscope and making these very minute movements. And you know, there was some elective, you know, like breast implant things that are totally elective. But then there was also this, you know, these really, you know, crazy reconstructions of an injury or a burn or something. I mean, it really did open my eyes to different, I think, subspecialties and different surgeries and kind of where you can go from there. But it was honestly, it was fascinating. It was really long surgeries.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you go in surgery, you go from like, you know, doing surgeries like cholecystectomies or appendectomies, right? And like where you're just like resecting, like, you know, certain parts of the body without a whole lot of finesse, if I can say that, right? And then you go to like, you know, recon, right? Where like they're like slowly doing, you know, like surgeries, and like it's like so meticulous and very, very, very like control setting. So like, for me, like I did bariatric surgery, and I did transplant, right? And then on ENT, I did see some head and neck reconstruction, you know. And it's just like there's so many facets to surgery that, like, you know, even if you're not someone who is like, you know, wants to be in that fast pace, like, you know, running around trying to like put a fires kind of thing, or like trauma surgery, for example, you can be someone who does recon where you can actually, like, you know, slow down and like do your work, you know, in a very meticulous way in a very delicate way. So even within surgery, I felt like there were so many aspects to it that really attracted me. I like the structure of like surgery. The thing that probably wasn't for me in surgery was the amount of time you actually get to spend with a patient. Most of the time, your patient is asleep, right? Majority of the time that you spend with a patient, you know, they're not awake, and you don't really have that, you know, conversation, that, you know, relationship as much as maybe some other specialties like oncology, where we spend so much time talking to our patients face to face, right? So that maybe was the thing that wasn't for me when it came to surgery.
Yeah, I would say, you know, and they'll tell you, you have to love the OR. Mm-hmm. Love it. And if you don't love it, then it's not for you, because that's where you're spending most of your time. And I, right. you know, I liked it, but I definitely didn't love it.
Right.
Yeah, I would say it's a really interesting experience. And it's, you know, again, it's kind of like, we'll never do it again. So mm-hmm. it's really cool to take what you can from it.
Right.
Also, a few things I didn't like as much. So as a student, it was tough starting with surgery because, you know, as a med student, you end up doing these rotations, and at the end of every rotation, you have this kind of shelf exam, or like a mm-hmm. mini board exam.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the entire surgery exam was based on your knowledge of internal medicine. Mm-hmm. And I had not taken any internal medicine, so it was very difficult for me to kind of study and do well.
Right.
And again, it's also your first rotation, so sometimes that can be challenging to figure out what you can do.
Right, figuring out how to even study, because...
Right.
In these like rotations where you're doing clinical stuff, you have to maintain the schedule, right? You got to come in, you know, early in the morning, like at least when I did surgery, you know, reporting around like 5:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And you're not leaving to like, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock, right? And then having to also study for yourself and knowing, you know, how to study for that, because you don't have a whole lot of time to do that. I think for me, the thing that really was like a little bit of an adjustment that I had to make as I started doing rotations was realizing that sometimes your grade was not necessarily in your control. It was always like a little bit more subjective than, you know, majority of your school life, right? Majority of your school life, you're reading a textbook or you're going to lectures, and then you're taking a test, right? And then like doing well or doing however you do based on your book knowledge, right? But like on rotations, it was your performance and like how you carried yourself, right? And how you presented, you know, the patients that you were seeing. So it was a little bit more a subjective kind of like assessment of you as an individual. And so that was part of your grade, right? And the other part of your grade was taking this, like, you know, shelf exams, right? So for me, like, you know, kind of adjusting to what kind of impression that, you know, I give off to my attendings or the residents, because that will affect your grade as well, right? That for me was like, for the first time, it wasn't just you just taking control of your grades, right? So.
Yeah, the subjectivity is real.
Right.
You know, after the first rotation that everyone finished, essentially every one of my classmates would ask the other classmates
uh-huh.
on the rotation they're going to be on, like, hey, how was your site? You know, what are your thoughts about if I should rank this site high or not? Because sometimes some sites people would grade easier, or they would have lower expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Your grade would be significantly impacted by that. So it was really also like a game you're playing. Where can I go? Even if this site is closer, I can like walk to it. Maybe I should go take the car and go farther because my grade is going to be, you know, better.
Impacted by that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that part of it, I mean, if I was a med student today, knowing what I know, I think part of it is also, you know, having that conversation with either your attending or like some of your senior resident, like what is the expectation of me? Because I feel like when you start rotation, especially in surgery, you, on the first day, you're thrown into chaos, right?
Yeah.
You never really have that time to really talk to anybody about what the expectation of the rotation is. You probably see, I saw my tendon on surgery when we were doing surgeries. And then after that, I was mostly with the, you know, the interns and like the residents, right, for the most part.
Yeah.
But a good majority of your grades comes from the attendant and right. They ask the residents, right?
Yeah.
So it was, there's so many tiers to how you actually get evaluated. So I think, like, you know, as a med student, if you start in a medical school rotation, you want to, if you have the opportunity, just ask, oh, how am I going to be evaluated and what can I do better, even every week, right? Okay, hey, how can I be better at this, right? And I think I realized that maybe in fourth year to really ask those questions and like and get that kind of like feedback from, you know, senior residents and like attendants. But in third year, where you're mostly like, you know, kind of like afraid, right? Or mostly they're trying to just like not look stupid. That was the primary thing, right? You're not trying not to look stupid. You forget to like step back and actually think about how you're going to be evaluated and what your role is on that team that, you know, you find
yourself. Yeah, I wish I knew that before. I started doing that in like middle of my third year. But that was, I wish I knew that. You know, I will also say it's always an adjustment. I didn't feel like I was really knew what I was doing until like late October when.
So late October would be what? Four?
It's like 3-4 months in.
Okay.
I feel like I started surgery, then I had family medicine, and they both weren't, okay, actually maybe earlier October when I started pediatric rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the first rotation where it was like, okay, expectations were shared. They would actually teach. I feel like they were actually teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that I started to learn like the medicine of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes time. And then you've already been through a couple of rotations. So now you realize, oh, what are these exams about? How do I study?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when can I do these questions on my own mm-hmm. time? So
mm-hmm.
I do think that just continuously evolves as the year goes on,
right.
Being comfortable with the situation.
Right. Yeah. Good point. So, I mean, let's kind of move forward. So third year, right? You're doing internal medicine. You're doing some surgery. You're doing some OB, right? I did neurology. It's another one that, you know, you take in third year, right? So moving to fourth year, I'm assuming by fourth year, Anish, you knew that you wanted to do radiation oncology, right? So what was your game plan? Like, what is the game plan of a med student when they decide what specialty they want to do and you're starting fourth year? What was the process like for you?
Yeah, so I would say the first thing was I went back and thought about radiation oncology. So I was able to do like a 2-week elective in my third year.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do that just to confirm, you know, I really like this. I mean, it sounds like a short time, 2 weeks, but I think
that's a lot of time, actually.
Yeah, but it is a lot of time. And I think when you go on your rotations, you'll realize stuff you really didn't like and liked about each field and what you could really see yourself doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I realized, though, most of med school, you learn about physiology and mm-hmm. physiological pathways, that in practice, I really didn't actually like anything about physiology for the most part.
Right.
It really was not my thing. So general medicine fields, you know, especially things like cardiology, mm-hmm. I just like cannot do it. I literally like, I feel like my brain was just shutting off
right.
because I just couldn't get into it.
Right.
But anatomy was definitely more my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think you go through things like that where you'll see what you like and dislike. Another thing in a practice standpoint is like rounding. I really didn't enjoy rounding.
Mm-hmm. What about rounding didn't you like?
Yeah, so I thought I would enjoy, you know, it's where you're conversing with your fellow colleagues.
Right. That's about the quintessential, like, you know, getting the team together, right?
Right, getting the team together, conversing about the patient cases and making those decisions. But what I personally felt was it was a lot of conversing without concrete decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes you still have to wait on a lot of things before making any decision.
Right.
I felt like my rounds sometimes were also 3 hours, and you're just kind of in the hallway for 3 hours standing. And as a resident, trying to put in orders, like taking the computer on wheels, trying to put in orders, but still not really, quote unquote, getting things done until after the rounding's over.
Right.
And I wasn't a fan of that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I didn't have the attention span for that. And that's personally, I was losing attention after like 30 minutes.
Right.
Maybe that's just reflects poorly on me. But I know I wasn't the only one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll say one funny story about my experience rounding. There was a solid month, and my internal medicine rotation was very long. It was 11 weeks. And I felt it was very tedious by week number 8.
Right.
But, you know, I really, in order to make myself awake, okay, I wanted to see the John Oliver show. It was in New York, you know, and he had a free show.
Right.
But you had to log on to his website and put your name in at exact time every day. It was like 9:30 or 10 or something like that.
9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's
peak time for rounding.
Yeah, it's peak rounding time.
Okay,
so
okay.
Every day I would, you know, it's like 9:30. I'm like, all right, I'm going to excuse myself for 1 minute. And I would go open my phone, put my name in the lottery system for like a few minutes and come back. And I felt bad, but at the same time, it gave me something to look forward to. It like made me more engaged. Unfortunately, never got.
You didn't get in.
I did not. It was really fortunate. But my friend, a couple of my friends did.
Okay.
Yeah, it was unfortunate.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like I felt like rounding was one of the things that, like, remember I told you when I volunteered at a VA hospital, seeing the doctors round and like just standing there as someone who wasn't yet in medicine, right? Was kind of like inspirational. It was kind of cool to be part of the gang, trying to figure out what is wrong with the patient and like what the solutions were going to be, right? And that having, I think I had this like nostalgic or like romantic feeling around that idea when I got to med school. I remember being in the VA volunteering and, you know, there were like this other guys who were in like white coats and I wanted to be like them, kind of like making decisions about someone's care, right? So I thought that feeling was going to be transplanted into when I started rotation. I did like rounding because I, you know, that was the point where you get to put your best foot forward, right?
Yeah, all the
attendants were there, the residents were there. If you prepare well for your presentation, this is the chance to impress everybody and hopefully get a good, you know, assessment of your skill, right? But at the same time, you're presenting and there's like 12 people looking at you and they're very close to you. They're standing right there in front of you, right? And you're in that environment where you have to impress and any little mistake can be seen as like some failure on your part, right? So that was in of itself very, you know, stressful. But I think some stress is good, you know, as physicians, the job that we do, we have to learn how to like tolerate stress and like be able to, you know, rise above it, right? The other part of rounding that I felt like was maybe not for me was that there was so much redundancy, so much like what I would probably say, you know, I would probably say that it's a waste of your time, right? Because the agenda wasn't very clear at times where, you know, we know that we're going to go through every patient, but like often we get sidetracked doing things that like end up not helping any of us or even the patient or being interrupted by someone else, right? Or some consulting physician would kind of chime in and like derail us from like what we were trying to do. It's not like you're sitting. I mean, I had a few rotations in my, you know, residency where, you know, I actually did sit and run with like my attendants, which was like, and then we had coffee. We're very efficient.
Yeah.
But you felt comfortable doing that, right? And, but like for the most part, like, you know, where I did med school, you know, we're standing on our feet for like 3 or 4 hours in the same place. It's not like you're moving a lot, right? In the same place, right?
Yeah.
And half of the time that you're spending doing that, like, didn't really matter. Or, you know, we had to still go back after doing all of that to do those same things. But but now actually make the real decisions about those things that we discussed before, right? So there were so many like inefficiencies that I can get a little bit impatient about, right? That I was like, oh, I mean, we talked about this yesterday, the same plan, right? And the patient is on track to meet those goals now. Why are we wasting time doing this thing over and over again? Because we know it's not going to be helpful for us to do that. So that, and obviously that's the message, then you know, there's no way you're able to descend that and also be able to have the authority to speak that to your superiors, right? The residents, half of the time, didn't like that, you know, that system either, right? And if I'm being honest, some of the attendants did not, but that was kind of like, it's the tradition, right? It's the tradition of medicine that people did. So like, we just kind of like did that. And we didn't think about whether actually that was going to be efficient. And I think efficiency matters in medicine, right? And so for me, that was them.
Yeah, I just want to put the caveat for everyone listening. This is also two radiation oncologists. I'm glad someone likes rounding out there.
So Right. I mean, obviously, we are radiation oncologists, yeah, and there is probably some sense of like our personalities and what we want out of medicine that makes rounding the thing that we do not want to do, right? So that makes sense. But I think I know internal medicine physicians, you know, because if you went to med school, mostly up to half of your class is going to be internal medicine, right?
Yeah,
so, you know, you all the people that like internal medicine, there's a lot of them that also do not like rounding, right? Because of the way it is done, right? So,
and then they may end up specializing into something.
Right. And they end up, and usually more often, you know, internal medicine is the back, like I said, is the backbone of all medicines, really, right? More often people end up specializing into something else from the primary internal medicine, right? So like if you do gastroenterology, if you do hem-onc or medical oncology, right? If you do nephrology, like there's so many specialties where you have to do internal medicine and do that kind of rounding and then move on to do something else, right? And and I think it's fair to say that, yeah, there are a lot of internal medicine people who find rounding inefficient. You know, that's a fair thing to say. So, yeah, I mean, that was maybe my thing about rounding, but I think I got the point of it.
Yeah.
But I also, there was also inefficiencies associated with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one thing I didn't enjoy doing. I mean, even the other rotations like radiology, I really liked radiology, but I realized I needed direct patient care.
Right.
And then I want to do cancer care. So, you know, I kind of have to rule it out, but you end up, you know, you end up liking certain things about every field and disliking things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it was, you know, the thing about every rotation was that you want to find out what you like about a rotation and what you don't like about the rotation, because that can help you kind of narrow down your options. And even if you don't like something about a rotation, right, there are certain things you can live with and there are certain things you can't live with, right? Like you mentioned with radiology, right? I loved radiology rotation, but I think something that if I was a radiologist, I probably couldn't live with was not having that patient contact where I actually get to like make decisions around their
treatment decisions
around their care. I think that was like a non-negotiable for me, right? But it was, everything else about radiology is really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Right? Being able to look at the image and like it's know great. What is abnormal, right? Yeah. And sometimes it's not very clear to, you know, the normal eye, you know, like other physicians can look at the same image and not be able to tell you what is wrong. But if radiologists will look at it and tell you this, 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 and that, it's like, how do you see that?
You learn a lot from the radiologists and they have a good, you know, good quality of life. you know, with patient care and you realize it's under rotations, there is that kind of emotional burden, that stress is always there. And when you're in radiology, they have their own stresses, of course.
Right.
But it's not a direct patient interaction, but, you know, managing the patient kind of stress and emotional burden, which, you know, which really can be very helpful for your own sanity and quality of life.
Right. Right. And I mean, the caveat here is that there's subspecialties in radiology, right, that have a lot of patient care, patient contact, right? Like interventional radiology, they tend to actually make treatment decisions about patients, right? And then if you're doing some breast, right?
You'll see patients.
You see patients breast imaging, right? And you know, breast biopsies, doing biopsies and stuff like that.
You will get that patient arrived.
Right. You get some.
You also help save yourself from that kind of emotional burden.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. So, you know, there are some people that I would really attract, right? Another neat, specialty that I thought was also like very integral to medicine, but we never really saw much, was pathology, right?
Yeah.
Like pathology is actually very close to what we do in the first 2 years of medicine, right? Like all those slides that you see in your first aid, textbook. So the first aid textbook is like the Bible of like the first 2 years of like med school, where we use that to study and do well on our board exams. You see a whole lot of pictures, and most of those pictures are coming from pathologists, like those stains that you see, right? And I feel like we have that contact with them in the first 2 years in terms of the book knowledge. But then like when we get to the floor, we don't really see the pathologist.
Yeah, they're like hidden somewhere. I think I spent a couple of days with them. Actually, I think it was really funny. In my, that's right, in my third year med school, the pathology department, because it wasn't a required rotation, they actually paid. They gave like a paid 1 week stipend for a student who wants to rotate with them. Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, you know, I didn't have time and I wasn't interested.
Because they wanted to attract students?
Yeah, they wanted to attract students. But I mean, it's a cool field if that's your thing.
Yeah, it is cool, but, you know, like you said, we never really see pathologists, right? Yeah. Maybe in oncology now we see pathologists a lot more, right?
We interact with them a lot.
Right.
We even know people's names, you know, we know their names.
Right, like... right. So now, like, in oncology, for example, like, you know, when we do our tumor boards, we actually have pathology there to explain to us what is seen on the slides, whether something is, like, cancerous, right? Whether the margins are positive or not, right? Like this kind of stuff are like stuff that are things that we need a pathologist to kind of clarify. But like I feel in med school, we don't necessarily
see. There's like world famous pathologists that I know the name of now just because, you know, we've had patients, they've sent slides to that institution and they've reviewed it, you know. So, but it's not something you think, you know, is a thing.
Right, right.
Yeah, I would also say that, you know, there's all these subfields that you may not have any idea about, you know, that just, you know, let's say, for example, maybe you don't like internal medicine, but there could be this subspecialty, sort of subspecialty that you actually think is so cool, like, you know, like electrophysiology or interventional gastroenterology or, you know, interventional nephrology, all sorts of things. And additionally, just when you, you know, go on rotation, just keep in mind sometimes your experience or your thoughts on the field may not really necessarily be about the medicine, but just maybe about extraneous factors of your experience. And I think that was because all those factors are so influential sometimes in helping you choose a field. Like, honestly, I thought my intro medicine rotation, I did half of it on one site, half of it on the other. And one site I ended up doing other rotations on, and I felt very sad in that hospital. And I don't know if it was like the lighting and it was just like dim lights.
Or the lighting?
Yeah. And it was like a, you know, it was like a Bronx City hospital where people, you know, have NOMA, there are just, you know, there's really advanced problems. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like it was so difficult to help people.
Mm-hmm.
But also, yes, the lighting was, I'm not going to lie, man, that lighting really stung.
So if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that, you know, making your decisions on what you like about a specialty might not necessarily really be about a specialty, but it might be that particular hospital that you're in.
Yeah, it could be the hospital, the cool mentor that, or the not cool mentor, mm-hmm. you know, that you have can all mm-hmm. be impactful.
Right. And I think the opposite is also true. So like for me, I thought that ENT was the thing for me. And the only reason that I think I enjoyed ENT to the extent that I did for mm-hmm. the first 3 years in medical school was because of the mentor that I had. Right. But then once I saw, you know, in other ENTs, I went into the OR, right? And I went to a conference for, you know, otolaryngologists, right? That's when I realized, okay, like, I don't necessarily think this specialty is what I made it out to be.
Right.
So the opposite can also be true about if you really want to have like a very broad and holistic approach to what you decide to go into. That could be something that you need to factor in, right? To really realize about a rotation, about a specialty before you make a decision. But at the same time too, it could also just be that simple, right? It could be that, you know, you like your attending or your mentor, and so you want to be like them, and yeah, that's fine.
It could be that simple.
And you learn to love your rotation or your specialty later on, right? You know? And it could be that you don't like a specialty because you met someone in it and that puts you off. And that's fine because you're probably going to end up doing something that you like better than, you know, the thing that you didn't choose because someone, you know, put you off, right? So it might be as simple as how you feel on the rotation. And, you know, it could be as complicated as I really thinking and writing down the pros and cons of
right.
every one of them. And I think
at the end of the day, it's like gut feeling.
Right. At the end of the day, you know, you're going to make it not just on some super rational decision. Some of it is going to be an emotional decision, and that's okay. That's fine too as well. So yeah, so back to fourth year. So, you know, you now know that you want to do radiation oncology. You definitely want to, like, you know, do those rotations first, right, to try and get letters of recommendations, right, for your application into residency. And then there are some, you know, away rotations that you maybe have to do, right? Did you do any away rotations, Anish?
Yeah, so there's definitely some specialties where they recommend or mandate away rotations.
Mm-hmm.
Radiation oncology, they highly recommend it because it's a small field.
Mm-hmm.
They want to know you really want to do it. You know, other fields like emergency medicine actually mandates you to do away rotations at other institutions. So you definitely have to
emergency medicine?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you definitely have to look at that. And for me, I did three away rotations.
Okay.
So when we say away rotations, we mean rotations that are not at your institution. And there are a number of, I think, factors that go into where you might want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be an application process, like there is for radiation oncology.
Right.
Most programs have some type of application process,
right,
and that program director will have to approve
mm-hmm.
you coming there. I think, you know, some people may say, all right, I want to kind of target this region, you know, maybe just as an example, New York region.
Right.
Philly region, Northeast, and be like, hey, I want to do, I wrote, you know, one institution each place or three institutions in the same area because I want right. people to know, like, hey, I want to match you.
Right.
You end up realizing it's kind of a game you try and play. I don't know how to play correctly, but
what do you mean game?
So when you go into the residency application, you are trying to convince these, you know, program directors, attendings, faculty that you want to be at that institution,
right,
and that you will rank them highly.
Okay.
And, you know, ideally, so the person who won the, who developed the match formula won the Nobel Prize for it.
Uh-huh.
And essentially it's just a resource allocation formula. It's you rank where you want to go, programs rank who they want, and they allocate someone to each place.
Okay.
But in reality, it's not that simple, because programs actually have incentives to get the person they want high on their list.
Okay.
I remember I attended a meeting at my institution where all the program directors would go around and say what position they had matched. So what position on their list they had matched.
Okay.
And they could even allocate funding and different things based on that. So they are incentivized to match someone who's high on their list.
Okay.
So the reason I say that is when you are doing these away rotations and when you're ranking your list, you know, they will try to get a feel, and maybe not every program, but some programs will try and get a feel for if you're really going to come here, if you're really going to rank them. So maybe you have family in the area, or maybe you have no one in the area, and they may look that poorly unless you do all your away rotations in that same area.
Right.
So, you know, you try and kind of play this game, and some people will do that.
Right, because they don't want to waste their ranking on someone who definitely does not want to come to the place. Or like it's not,
they think will rank them lower than they'll rank another place.
Right.
So I definitely thought that for me. I did not do that approach. I did the not so used approach, which was I felt I was, you know, I grew up in Jersey. I went to med school in New York. I felt kind of like in this bubble. I needed to leave. And I used I need to leave at least for some months.
Okay.
And I used my away rotation as an opportunity to experience life elsewhere.
That sounds like you.
So okay. I went to Philadelphia. I went here at Fox Chase Cancer Center for a month. And I had, though living in Jersey, I never really spent any time in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. New York was always my city.
Okay.
I came to Philly. I went to Oregon Health and Science University.
Okay.
Great experience there for a month.
Uh-huh.
And I went to University of California, San Diego for a month. And then because I was on the West Coast, I spent time with my family in Seattle in between those rotations.
Gotcha.
So I was really like not around for like a solid 3 months.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't regret it.
Right.
I had a fantastic time. I experienced life.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never really been to the West Coast.
Right.
I mean, I'd been to Seattle a couple times, but outside of that, I hadn't. So for me, it was a really cool experience. And I saw institutions that I definitely would not have seen.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I'm actually still friends with a couple of the residents I met. And so I thought that was cool.
On the West Coast? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We went to concerts together. We hung out together.
Right.
But I think more importantly, it also gave me perspective on different areas and maybe how they practice and different populations of patients.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I approached it. It's definitely not necessarily the right approach.
Right.
It was just what I did.
Right. I think you take the approach that worked for your particular situation. For you, it was trying to get out of the bubble, right?
Yeah.
For me, it was important that I end up in this area, right?
Yeah.
And so my then girlfriend was, you know, starting her PhD program here in Philly, right? And it was like, you know, we knew at that time that we're probably going to get married and all that kind of stuff, right?
That's when you have to decide, right? When you're about to rank your list.
Right. And like, so like for me, it was important. Did I want to get married and then go live somewhere in California while my wife was in Philadelphia? No. Did I want to be away from her? No, I did not. And so it was important that like I matched to at least one school, like one of the schools in the area. And I don't want it to be more than an hour drive for me as a resident, because that's a lot of time you're commuting. So all my rotation was in the area. Like my away rotations were all in the area, because it made sense that, you know, that I did that. And in that kind of like, that's something that you can also tell the PDs, the program directors, when you're rotating, or like the residents when you're rotating. It's like, yeah, I'm interested in this program. And these are my reasons. I have a spouse here. You know, I moved from Ghana to Philadelphia area, right? And I've been here for 10 years. So I have roots here, right? So, like, I'm not necessarily looking to move away from this area. And the opposite was that when I interviewed Mayo, right, it was like Minnesota and Philadelphia. It's like, wait, are you going to come here? And I was like, yeah. I mean, if I get into Mayo, and that's where I'm at, do I think I will like it here, or do I think that would be a good choice for me? Yeah, because I've moved from Ghana to Philadelphia, right? So I know what it takes to kind of move from one place to another, right? So you can express whatever advantage that you have depending on who you're talking to, right? But if you ask me what's my priority was to stay in the area with my friends and my family and my spouse. But at the same time, if that's not what is working out for you, you got to have plan Bs, right? And you got to be able to explain those plan Bs, because program directors are also interested in knowing those plans, right? Why you're picking them, right? And what you're trying to get out of applying to them. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say exactly. They're trying to figure out, you know, where you put them on the rank list.
Right.
And yeah, some of my reasons were, you know, when I don't know anyone in the area, it was not a very compelling, but I did try to make the case like, yes, I want to move elsewhere. Like this is the opportunity. And it is, mm-hmm. It is the opportunity to move elsewhere, put roots elsewhere.
Right.
You know, ultimately what ended up happening was I felt I couldn't commit to moving somewhere for 4 years without mm-hmm. having any like really emotional support, because it mm-hmm. is a big decision. But that's why my transitional year,
mm-hmm.
I ended up only ranking places outside my area.
Gotcha. So how did you rank your residency programs? How did you rank them?
Yeah, so well, we have our preliminary year of medicine or surgery, depending on what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then we rank list. Then we have our radiation oncology rank list.
Mm-hmm.
When I thought about it a lot, I ended up, again, I felt it was difficult for me to commit for that long of a time,
mm-hmm.
especially residency, just talking to people. And they would tell me they think it's really important to have that support system. And I felt convinced to an extent that that was true. And I do think things have changed as I've, you know, gotten older, had my own experiences, but I do think it's important. And it's nice. My parents are getting old. It's nice to kind of be in the area. So I ranked my transitional year and preliminary year programs. I tried to be in a totally different city.
It's just only 1 year.
It's only 1 year.
Okay.
1 year. And I wanted to be at a program where I felt there was a good camaraderie amongst mm. residents. I did interview at programs where I didn't feel like people talked to each other or hung out.
Okay.
And if I was going to move somewhere different for a year, not know anyone, I would want there to be some type of camaraderie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the decisions of gut feeling, and I ended up ranking the same few top programs in my preliminary year with one of my good friends who also went to med school with me.
Okay.
She's also a radiation college resident, but
we
ended up doing RTYR together.
Right.
And just kind of where, you know, what city I want to be at. And she's in Chicago, probably is my top three. And then I ended up matching at one of them.
Okay.
And then radiation oncology, my experience rotating was definitely very influential. I knew mm-hmm. I was very comfortable in this program.
Mm-hmm.
And I ranked it, you know, very highly. And I realized I wanted to preferably be in the area.
Right.
With that being said, you know, in my top five, I did place a couple of places that were on the West Coast.
Okay.
And I had to be comfortable being like, hey, if I match there, I'll match there.
Yeah.
But I felt comfortable with that decision.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think, I mean, I've already said this, but for me, it was important to stay here. So both for my, you know, transitional year or the intern year that we have before we do our actual programs, I wanted to be, you know, in the area. And, you know, so I did rank, you know, the Philadelphia schools, you know, higher than any other places, right? And the other places that came after, I made sure that, you know, I was ranking them based on the fact that I had family in those cities. So
makes sense.
Columbus was like, you know, I have family in Columbus, right?
And you want to support.
Right. And then Raleigh, you know, Duke area, right? You know, I have family there. So like, yeah, it's important that I rank that area. you know, Baltimore area wasn't too far away from Philly, right? So if I'm not going to end up in Philly, then Baltimore is like the next closest thing, right? So that was important. But I didn't want to live in New York City because I felt like it was too crowded, you know, so I didn't rank them, you know, as high because that wasn't the thing for me. So, you know, essentially, the reason why we're talking about this is that you really have to think about where you're going to live for like 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, sometimes as med students, before we get into, you know, these programs, all we are concerned about is matching, right? Like you want to match because nobody wants to not match and have to scramble for like a spot where they're, you know, some program that they don't want to be in, right? So yes, it makes sense that like people want to really be accepted anywhere, right? But you got to think about where you want to live because it's so important. I just can't see myself doing residency in some totally like random place like
that. Yeah, those questions about life, like those really, like, right. Where do you want to be? Where do you see? I mean, they become so important. And you right. don't even really think about those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will also say sometimes it comes down to program. Like I ended up not ranking a couple places because I knew after my interviews with them, I was like, I just cannot go here.
Right. Yeah. So you get a sense of what the programs actually look like. So a lot of the programs will actually have like a night where you get to hang out with, you know, the residents and like do dinner with them. Right. And and you get to know a lot about them. Right. And their way of doing things. Right. Even before you start your interview the next day. So you can kind of glean a lot from those experiences, right?
More than you think, especially when you're at a dinner and the residents are really hating on their program a lot. Really puts you off of that program.
Right. It does happen. It does happen. So keep an eye out, keep an ear out, right? To kind of see and hear some of the things that like, you know, you can pick up when you're doing those aware rotations, when you're doing your interview trail, right? So that those are really important things that you need to pay attention to.
And, you know, sometimes it really just depends on where you can interview. Mm-hmm. If you don't get one, you can always reach out to them and you're interested.
So. Right. So I guess like we maybe like winding down a little bit from this, you know, episode, what was your, you know, best rotation besides radiation? Don't tell me radiation oncology because I know you're a radiation oncologist. What was the other rotation? Right.
Pediatrics, actually.
Pete?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the rotation experience. Like, you know, you'll see this when you go to rotations. There are some rotations that are, like, not structured.
Okay.
My Pete's rotation was structured.
Okay.
Dr. Cass was incredible. Like, she was amazing at really teaching, and I felt like I learned so much from her, just about pediatrics, but also in general about how to approach med school life and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like the people I worked with, the residents, were really cool, and they were nice, and they were just kind of fun to hang out with. They were helpful. You could approach them with any issues.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, you know, I like kids, and honestly, I had a good time hanging out with the kids.
Okay.
As a med student, you know, you're not the resident. You're not really the ones that, you know, putting in the order and stuff.
Right.
So I had more flexibility to hang out with some of the kids. There was one, you know, I'll remember this kid always. He was sick, you know, he was kind of in and out, and we used to play like board games and then we used to play like Nintendo DS. And I mean, that was kind of fun. It was just hanging out, but it was fun to hang out with him. It was fun. I really enjoyed that experience.
I would
say Pete's was probably my favorite rotation. And, you know, one of the other things, I mean, they had like a Halloween party thing and we would all have trick-or-treats.
You had a lot of fun on Pete's.
Dude, Pete's was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I had a good time.
Huh.
How about you?
You know, I think I was probably the most fascinated with transplant.
That's right.
I just remember, like, you know, like just going to another hospital to kind of like get an organ, right? Like that feeling of like going to talk to family I wasn't doing the talking, obviously, right? To kind of like talk to them and like thanking them for like, you know, donating, right? An organ. and also go being in the operating room and seeing how you do, you know, organ transplantation, right? And like, just it's just remarkable because you're giving this person a new lease on life, right? Where you're taking this organ from another individual and then placing it in another person, and it's working. Like, it's like you can see, like, especially with kidney, right? Them recover from the surgery and then seeing how their lives were before and how they felt, and now they're doing so much better, right? I think transplant was like the really, really fascinating. Maybe the biggest one was like seeing a liver. I saw only like 2 liver transplants, and it was just like, oh my God, that's a whole lot that goes into like transplanting a liver. And just seeing someone who like was jaundiced, you know, in end stage liver disease, right? And then slowly like doing better and like, you know, recovering from that after they've gone through all the process of transplant, right? And see some of them in follow-up, right? And like looking at how they were before and like, and how they're doing after, you know, in follow-up. It's just like, it was so remarkable. Obviously it was surgery and it wasn't oncology. So it wasn't, you know, there's a whole lot of things about transplant that I definitely didn't want to deal with, you know, but I thought like just getting an organ transplanting and just like, you know, that organ starting to work in another individual was just remarkable.
Yeah. I will say I did see a lung transplant. Uh-huh. That was really cool.
Right.
That was fascinating.
Right. Really.
Oh, I'll also put a plug in for, it was only a few days in the palliative medicine team. It was, I knew that, I mean, I will never be a palliative medicine doctor, but I also really respected them a lot. So it was a really tough gig.
Yeah.
And like we do, you know, stuff like that we work with.
Yeah, we work a lot with palliative. I mean, there's a lot of ways that like even radons can be palliative.
Yes,
yeah, right.
Yeah. But I think this was, I guess what I mean is a lot of the end of life discussions, which, you know, I'm not like looking forward to them. I really respect the palliative doctors a lot.
Those are some heavy
stuff.
Those are the times where I wear my white coat.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's just, you got to come in with everything, right?
Yeah.
You got to come in with everything. And this is a really difficult conversation. And I think that's the time where, like, you can totally be honest with, like, you know, a patient, right? Like, just being, telling a patient that we think you're dying and we don't think we should be doing anything more for you because we'll be doing you more harm than good, right? I think that's a difficult, you know, thing. It's like, we all know it, the patient knows it, but until the doctor says, I think we have to stop.
Yeah.
It doesn't really sink in and you don't really accept that reality. And a lot of the time before you do have that conversation, you know, a lot of the patients know. And the times that they don't know, you know, sometimes they get angry, you know, like family members get angry. What are you saying? And then like, you know, you sit with them for a little bit and then they start, you know, really coming around to it. I think. That is heavy. I don't know if I would put that as my best rotation.
My best rotation.
All right. Right. But
was there the most surprising rotation? Like, was there a rotation found the most surprising?
Yeah. I just didn't realize how much people who are in labor poop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. For some reason, I didn't think of.
Excretion of liquids.
Like literally pooping. Like, and I was like, and we're all standing there, you know, delivering. And it's like, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
something you don't think about, but it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. They're like, they're exerting themselves, right? You know, they put, you know, bearing down on the abdominal muscles and all that kind of stuff. I just never really thought about it. It was just like, it's funny thinking about it, but like, it's just like, yeah. What about you?
my inpatient psych was really interesting. My day two, some guy tried to escape the ward, and my attending I was working with saw him, started running after him,
okay,
and like tried to pin him against the wall.
Really?
Yeah, dude. And then they call security or whatever, but they weren't there at that second. Pin against the wall. The guy turns around, punches Vitetti in the face.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man. And I was like, dude, is this psycho? Like, is this what, I'm expected to do? Yeah, that was definitely an experience.
Hopefully you didn't have to tackle anyone down, right?
I did not. I think they really pushed against the idea of students trying to tackle anyone. So But I was like, wow.
That was your first day too?
It was like day two.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Also, there was there were just some interesting patients.
Wow.
You see some interesting stuff on site.
Right. Sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I did see some interest. Not tackling someone. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I will never forget. The right clock right here in the cheek, man.
Yeah.
Right there.
All right. Well, I feel like this is a really good conversation on medical school, and there's a lot that goes through making the decision of what you're going to do in med school, and some of it will just come naturally. So I think that the overarching theme here is that, like, you really need to understand what you want and, you know, what you don't also like in a specialty, so that you're not spending so much time trying to, like, weed out things, right? Like, I feel like your time probably is better spent, like, narrowing things down sooner if you can. But I guess a part of the experience is also, you know, going through the process and building some character too, right? Out of all of that, I certainly wouldn't want to go through the route of, like, going to ENT, urology, and all that kind of stuff, and before coming to a conclusion that I like, you know, radiation oncology, I think it would probably be a smoother transition to just kind of, like, think about these things sooner than maybe later, than maybe fourth year, right? Like, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, it would have been much easier on basically your whole life if you decide earlier.
Right.
But that is all we have for today. Thank you for joining us. Yeah. If you're a med student, or even if you're a resident or attending, and you have your own stories you want to share, feel free to reach out.
Yeah.
Any of the ways in the show notes below. Next episode, we're going to talk about all about relationships and dating and medicine. So hope you join us then. Bye. See ya.